That brings us to our speaker. Our speaker is Sammy. She comes to us from South College Speakers Group. Please help me welcome Sammy.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Sammy Groh.
Hi, Sammy.
Can you hear me? I'm just waiting for God. I'm a little too fast sometimes. First of all, I want to thank you for inviting me to come up and share my experience, strength, and hope. It's always a privilege and truly an honor to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is July 29th, 1991, and that was the day God separated me from alcohol, and for that I'm eternally grateful. My home group is the South College Speakers Group in Newark, Delaware on Wednesday nights, 8:30. We'd love to have you come visit. I know some of you have. And come early enough, we'll go to dinner. And my phone number's in the book now that I don't drink. And my last name's in there. It's been in the same page for a long time. And I say that with grace and pride. My first name used to be left at a lot of places. Stalls and, you know, on dashes of cars and inside matchbook covers and all those places that, I don't know, once I have a couple drinks, it just sounds like a good idea to put it there. And in the morning, that idea didn't sound so darn good. So I haven't had any problem putting it in the phone book, so we're going to leave it at that. I have an awesome sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring beautiful women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the gift that I love the most is that by sharing my experience, strength, and hope with them, that's my job. My job is to hold their hand, take them through the steps, and put them in the hand of God, and then the results are up to him and her. And it wasn't always like that for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel sorry for the women I used to sponsor. They were like my possessions, you know. Like my men were my possessions, and my cars were my possessions, and your car was my possession, and, you know, my jewelry was mine, and what's mine is mine, and what's yours is half mine. And, you know, that's how I am. I'm not nice when I'm under the influence of alcohol. I know my responsibility today is simple. I'm to share with you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I grew up in this disease, and I didn't know at the time that there was a disease called alcoholism. What I knew was that I had a mother and actually I had a lot of fathers, but we'll start with the first one. I had a mother and a father who drank. And when they drank, they fought. And when they fought, people got hurt. And when people got hurt, some of us moved. And we moved a lot. And I know in hindsight now, just based on my own history, that moving targets are harder to hit. So I understand that principle, that we don't stay in one place too long. The heat gets warm, I'll just say that. It gets a little warm, and we don't want to be in trouble. So anyway, it was painful living there. And I don't blame my parents for my alcoholism. I truly don't. I did blame them for a lot of things for a long, long time. So anyway, I don't like living in this environment. My mother left my real father when I was less than 2 years old. She married her second husband, and he adopted me. And they had a little girl, and they both drank. And not the little girl, my mom and my stepfather. I don't know about her. But anyway, he adopted me, and sure enough, we started repeating that pattern right up front. And when she and he split up, he kept Nancy and my mom kept me. And this became a pattern in my life. Here's the deal. If I were to keep every name, I have to say this extremely slow because I forget. If I were to keep every name of every stepfather and every husband I had, my real name would be Sammy Jean Reburn, Preston, McCormick, Herrick, Scrocky, Herrick, Sissick, Peterson, Greg, Lind, Bro. And that's the power of alcohol. That's the power of alcohol. I wish I'd have gotten a golden charm for each one of those. I could retire today. But, you know, I didn't. What I got from all that was a lot of shame. A lot of shame and a lot of guilt. And, like I say, I hated being home, but I needed a lot. I needed a lot of attention. I needed a lot of love. And I would do whatever I needed to do to get it. And I would go wherever I needed to go. And for a long time, I hid in school. And school gave me all those things to help me feel better. You know, the big book says that we're, the majority of us are above average intelligence. And I believe that to be true. And grades came easily to me. And they stayed that way until, you know, I became a teenager, and then certain things started going on inside. I won't mention what they are. I think you know. And all of a sudden, school seemed a little boring. But recess didn't. Recess was nice, and what we did after school was nice, and some of those clubs were nice, so I got into the cheerleading, of course, because my third grade teacher told me I was loquacious, and it's a big word, and I thought that was really important. I didn't know it meant I talked too much. Hello. And so anyway, I'm the cheerleader with the big mouth, and one day I'm outside at school putting flyers underneath the windshield wipers of the cars in the parking lot to announce a pep rally we were going to have. And at this time, I'm in 10th grade. I never went to the same school 2 years in a row until 7th and 8th grade. I went to four schools in 1st grade, and then we changed locations every year after that until I ended up in a small town in Pennsylvania above Harrisburg called Newport. And I went there in 7th and 8th grade, and then we moved back to Delaware, and you know, I finished what was to be my last year of school down there. So anyway, I'm in this parking lot at school, and in the parking lot drives this 1959 shiny red convertible Chevy with this tan, blonde, Hollywood flat-topped, gorgeous specimen of God's work. And he pulls right up alongside of me. I mean, like, right up alongside of me. Papers go flying. And he looks at me as serious as a heart attack. And he says, "Well, hello, sweet pea." I'm in love. I'm about 15, 14. I'm stone in love with this specimen of God. And, you know, so we start to go out. And he introduces me to a Colt 45 malt liquor. And he tells me to drink it through a straw. Now, when I drank this Colt 45 malt liquor through a straw, and I'm looking at this, what becomes my higher power, I had my first spiritual experience. And I don't know how long you date, but there are a couple dates and I'm going steady. A couple more dates, I got pregnant. And I was tickled to death. Because, see, it got me away from that bad place, that bad situation. And I was more mature then than sometimes I am today. I had to grow up fast. I had a little brother to take care of. I didn't like what was happening in my home, and this was a way out for me. And, you know, there were several times as a young kid I attempted suicide, and alcohol saved my life. I believe that today. That, you know, once I drank that alcohol, I no longer didn't feel like I didn't fit in. I no longer felt like I wasn't enough. I no longer felt that I was different than you. I no longer felt that it was not okay to live on the other side of the tracks. No matter where we lived, I always thought our house was on the wrong side of the tracks. You know, and that's what was wrong. It was my parents. It was, you know, our home. It was the school. It was always everybody else. It was never Sam. It was never Sam. But I knew, even as a little kid, that I had a hole in me. And I tried to fill it with a lot of outside stuff. And Sweet Pea was the first. And, you know, and we both came from broken homes. And we promised, as two young kids, that that was never going to happen to our children. And that we were going to get jobs. Now, I had to quit school because when I was in high school, you couldn't be pregnant and stay in school. And he had already graduated, so at least one of us had a high school, you know, education. And I'm just going to stay home and be a good wife and a good mom. And I truly, truly wanted to be that so bad. You know, we're going to get our own little place. And, you know, we have grandiose ideas. And, you know, I wanted that white picket fence and that little house and this loving husband and these beautiful children. And alcoholism had other plans for me. So, you know, our literature talks about I am not capable of having a relationship with anybody. I don't have what it takes. I'm a user and an abuser of people. And I'm only out to see what's in it for me. I don't know that when I'm 16 years old. I really try with all my heart to give this, him and me, a fair chance at trying to be good parents, mature kids, and for a long time it worked. Now, a long time to me is 7 years. That's like a lifetime compared to where I came from. You know, I'm 7 years with this man. I'm married. I don't know who cheated first, but I knew we couldn't be true to each other. And, you know, to make a family, or to provide income for his family, he worked a full-time job, and then he also worked a part-time job at night playing in a band. You know, well, that's not a good idea when, in my opinion, when your wife is now stuck. See, all of a sudden my perception changes. It's no more this little happy bride. I'm stuck with this kid, and you're out partying, you know, playing in the band, rocking and rolling. Rock and roll, what do we say? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And now I have a resentment. And I didn't want the drugs, but I wanted some of that and rock and roll. And because I had a hole in me that I needed to fill, and he wasn't capable. You know, I know today he's human power. He can't fill that hole. But I didn't know that. So now what do? I'm off tearing up the lives of somebody else. And I'm cheating. My brain's out. And that marriage ends, because alcoholism had other plans for both of us. So I called Butchie my first MUI. I had a DUI once. I did get off of that. A high-powered attorney got me off for reckless driving. And my company that I worked for paid for everything. So I had a lot of enablers along the way, you know, when alcohol was still working for me. But, you know, I don't get DUIs. I get MUIs. And they said, well, what's an MUI, Sammy? I said, that's married under the influence. And just bear with me and you'll hear about the other three. So, anyway, Butchie and I, we part ways because we played a newlywed game one time with some friends. And they said, so give us the name of a book or the name of a movie that reminds you most of your marriage. Well, I'm a love bug. You know, I'm a romantic. So I say Love is Many Splendor Things. And Sweet Pea says Gunfight at OK Corral. And I said, we're not only not on the same page, we're not even in the same book. So I got to go because that's what I knew how to do. Grab my coat and move on. That's what we did. I learned that very young. Get your coat and move. So, you know, I had to. But because the hole was so big, I could never leave until I had somebody else to go to. I'm always working somebody over here. I don't want you anymore. And I didn't even know that it was that I had this fear of being alone. I didn't know that. I just knew that I was really attracted to door B. What's behind the curtain. So anyway, I'm home. I now have a second son, and that's the greatest gift Sweet Pea ever gave me. I love my boys. And I believe in my heart that the only love greater than a mother's love for her children is an alcoholic mother's love for her booze. They are the one thing that I promised I would never not provide for, and I was not able to keep that promise. And I'm not proud of it. It's just part of my experience. And thank God you gave me steps, you gave me a God, and you gave me a lot of other tools to use to not only forgive myself, but to make amends to my sons. And today, my sons call me two things. They tell me I'm the bomb. And I know there's a church over there, but I'm going to tell you this anyway. They tell me I'm the shit. And, that's pretty amazing for a mother who let one of her sons go live with his dad. You know, this is what I look like when I'm crying with joy. In case you don't recognize joy, this is what you get when you come here and you stay. And you do this, the few things we ask you to do. You get so filled up with joy that it's just, it's beyond my wildest dreams. So anyway, I let this one guy go live with his father and his stepmother. So now it's just me and the little guy. And the doorbell rings one day, and I open it, door B, and I see a suit. And I just keep looking up. 6'5". Gorgeous. He was the cable man. And I said, this is so true. I said, oh, thank you. I said, hello, Sweet Pea. I knew what that meant. And he didn't get Colt 45, but he did get a Black Russian. Because I'm a lady now, see, I don't do the beer. I'm a, you know, I'm not going to be like my mom. My denial was so strong. I drink, you know, fancy drinks out of stem glassware, and I drink them in nice places. And so anyway, now I got a guy that's, I married him too. And got my second MUI. White Russians and the cable man. Mm-hmm. That's all you need for a good wedding. You know, I tell everybody I am so extremely self-centered that always the bride, never a bridesmaid. I've never been a bridesmaid in my entire life, ever. And I don't think I would like that position. You know, if I can't be the center, I just don't want to play. No, I'll play house, but I'm not doing the get a pink gown and walk down alongside of the bride. No, I'm not doing that. And I'm still not healthy enough to do that, but I'm not going to go there. So anyway, here's the deal. Because I'm an alcoholic, and because my drinking progresses, and because I have a hole in my soul that's shaped like God and I don't know it, and because I have a spiritual malady, and because I'm a true alcoholic, and when I take a drink, I'm going to take a second one whether I want it or not, because of all that stuff that I don't know yet, there's no way that marriage could have lasted. And I was so insanely jealous about this man that it sent me to my first psychiatrist. See, alcohol truly is my drug of choice. But alcohol in a man's suit can be a drug for me too. And I know that. He was my Tanqueray gin in a man's suit. And it didn't work. And we hurt each other, we hurt my sons, and we hurt a lot of other people. So, no more of that. I'm going to be on my own. I'm going to continue to drink when I want to drink, where I want to drink. I'm going to have babysitters for the boys. I always work. Matter of fact, you know, it talks about us. Like, you know, I worked at a college all day. I went to college at night, all night. I closed the Royal Exchange, then I went to an after-hours club, and then I did my homework, and then I went to work. Maybe. Most of the time, I did. I had a boss that said to me, Sammy, if you're going to keep having those liquid lunches, you need more than mints. Guess what? Use Hall's eucalyptus. I hate them, but I like them when they cover, in my mind, probably only in my mind, Tanqueray gimlets at lunchtime. So anyway, I'm just going to be by myself with these boys, and I'm going to raise them all by myself because I'm Little Miss Independent. So what do? I get the brainy idea that maybe I ought to just join Parents Without Partners. You know, they'd have a lot of activities for the kids, and they're subsidized, and, you know, the parents, men and women, they volunteer to do things for these kids, and kids are together, and it's, you know, it's a good thing. Well, here's what I found about Parents Without Partners. They drink like fish, which is right up my alley, so I knew I made the right decision. But here comes Billy Gregg. MUI number 3. Like, don't get ahead of me. You know, I'm just going to fast forward. There's 4 of them. All right? Now, I'm so full of shame. I'm so full of guilt. Because by the time I've married the 4th one, see, I married the 4th one because this woman says to me, you're dating my brother-in-law, right? Yes, I am. I cannot wait till he marries you so you can straighten out his kids. I know I can. You know, I could do anything if people would just listen to me. I mean, I have everybody's answer. I don't suggest you come to me about relationships. Unless you want to know what not to do, then I could talk to you. But, you know, I'm going to straighten out these kids, and my chest is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger based on all these things that this woman thinks I can do. And I almost destroyed those 2 girls with my anger. My drinking is like off the charts. I am one of those drinkers. It happens mostly to women where the last 3 years I went down so fast. I'm a daily drinker now. I'm pouring Kahlua in my coffee to get ready for work. I can't get a shower without a drink outside the shower door. I call, you know, relaxing, filling the bathtub with bubbles and putting at least, you know, some wine, some candles, a couple of cigarettes, whatever, and stay in there and then ask my son to bring me more wine. So this one night, I always made sure my kids either spent the night with someone or had a sitter or whatever. But my head, you know, alcoholism progresses, and one night it told me to, I had a fight with some boyfriend. I don't know when I had time to have a boyfriend, but I found time somehow. But we had a fight, so I have to go talk to him and make up. And, of course, we can only talk at a bar. And it was a nice bar, because, remember, I'm top shelf now, and it was a nice place, a Sheraton. So I can't get a sitter, so I say to my son, how about if Mom just leaves you have a paper route, so you're responsible. How about if I just leave the phone number for you of where I'm going to be, and, you know, if anything comes up, call me, because I'm not going to be gone very long. I don't know if you've ever said that. I went to that place, and I met Joel, and we had our talk. But see, I started drinking. Now, when I start drinking, I can't keep my word. I don't know where I'm going to be after I take that first drink. I don't know who I'm going to be with. I don't know when I'm coming home. I don't know what condition I'm going to be in when I get there. And I came home the next morning at 6 o'clock, 6:15 or something. Unlocked the door to the apartment, and there's my youngest son sitting with 2 county police. He was so scared because it was a first. I had never done that. I had never left him alone. He called that place. But see, it closed, but I don't know about you, but when for some reason, when they're closing, I am just getting fired up. I don't know. So I'm not ready to close. And I didn't go home. Robbie called 911, and his words were, "My mommy's MIA." And I'd like to tell you I quit drinking. I didn't. I was scared. I was scared that they would take him away from me, so I stayed home and drank at home. And today they would have taken him. There's no question in my mind. And they had the right to take him in. And it's only by God's mercy that that didn't happen to us. And, you know, we spent a couple more years drinking. And he became the parent and I became the kid, just like it happened in my home. The promise that was never going to happen to my family happened. And I think we all get a moment of truth when we get that little, you know, glimpse of clarity. And this happened to me on July 28, 1991. My stepdaughter interfered with my drinking because, you see, I'm leaving home one more time. That's what I do. When the going gets tough, the tough go. I had to go. And she interfered with that. And she also interfered with my drinking. And by now I'm mean. Don't get between me and my glass. Don't even try it. I am as ugly as you can imagine. And she tried. She was so scared, she called my son at work. And he called me and he said, "Mom," I can still hear him all these years later, "Mom, what the hell have you done this time?" And I couldn't stand being Sammy anymore. I had nobody to blame. The people I loved were turning their back on me. They were questioning me at work about my performances. And, you know, I'm so grandiose that my denial was so strong. I'm drinking at the highest priced places in Wilmington. I'm drinking at a place called Harry's on Neyman's Road. Their phone number, by the way, is 475-3000 if you ever need to know it. And my stool was on the corner. And I stiffed them with a bar tab, a house charge of over $2,500. When I got sober, I filed bankruptcy and had over $55,000 of credit card debt because I was so grandiose when I was drinking. I rented limousines. You know, I bought you dinner. I bought you drinks. What I realize is I bought your love. I tried to buy your love to fill the hole. So what you see today is what you get. And if I ain't enough, truly that would break my heart. But it really would break my heart. But, you know, you're all just the friends I've never met yet. And that's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. So this night I bought him out. I said probably my first most honest prayer. I was mad at God for years for making me be born. I said, "Why would you make me be born? I'm such a mistake. Nobody wants me. You know, I'm not trustworthy. I'm a thief. I'm a liar. You know, I'm an adulteress." And I asked God to please either take me or show me a different way to live. Now, I had been seeing a counselor, and I had every self-help book in the world. I have quite the library, and I just wanted that magic sentence that was going to fix me. Some of those books, I had so many, I bought them twice, didn't even know it. You ever hear of My Mother, Myself, Nancy Friday, or whatever? I have her twice. And anyway, I'm so my mother, it's not even funny, but it's okay today. So anyway, I called Doris the next morning and I said, "Doris, there's something really, really wrong with me." And I still truly in my heart did not know it was alcoholism. And I said, "Doris, I'm crazy, I'm mentally ill. You've got to put me away." Now I know why they ask us to share. Because you heal. I can tell you, total strangers, things that I couldn't tell people I paid thousands and thousands of dollars to. You know, it's that language of the heart. I tell you my truth, you relate, and I get better. Go figure. And, so anyway, Doris asked me if I would be willing to go to a place in Philadelphia. And I said, I'll go anywhere you tell me. Now, it took a week. And I don't know I have alcoholism, right? And here's how sick I am. The obsession to drink was lifted from me that night. And I went to Harry Savoy Grill for 6 days in a row. And I never picked up another drink. But here's my illness. What do you think I told him? Like it's in vogue. I say, Jack, I don't think I should be drinking. I'm going to a private psych hospital on Friday in Philadelphia. Gary's going to take me. Like it's, I don't know if I thought I was a movie star or I'm going to the Betty Ford Clinic or what the hell I thought. But I went there every night and never drank. And I haven't had a drink since. And but I think it was my most honest prayer. And I think we get that little window. And God saved me. And so I go to, actually I went to Charter Fairmount Institute in Roxborough. And I knew I was safe as soon as we got off of the ramp that said Roxborough. My grandmother was born and raised in Roxborough, Pennsylvania. She had the closest relationship to God I've ever seen in my life. And I knew she prayed for all of her family every day. And she was no longer with us, so I have an angel. And when I saw Roxborough, the peace that came over me, you can't imagine. So I go to this mental institution, and they say, like they all say, you know, they have the, they call them the A-team. They have the A-team sitting around, 18 of them. And me, I'm on the chair in the middle like this. But I have on khaki pants, starched white shirt, gold jewelry, Estee Lauder perfume, huh? Gucci shoes, Gucci bag. I tell everybody today I was Gucci on the outside and Goodwill on the inside. And you could have put two pieces of me together. Today, I'm either Gucci Gucci or Goodwill Goodwill. But my insides and my outsides most days match. And it's an awesome feeling. It's an awesome feeling. So anyway, one guy thought I was the counselor. Well, that would have been sad. And so anyway, they say, Sammy, why are you here? And I tell them the truth. I'm either a paranoid schizophrenic or I have a split personality. Really? Yeah. What do you do for a living? I'm a secretary. And he says, you know, they get the history. You know how these are, these places are. And they take all my history and they say, oh, wow. We just think you suffer from the disease of alcoholism. First time I ever heard the word. Two things happened with that sentence. One, they told me I had a disease. Two, they told me I suffered. I know I'm not powerful enough to give myself a disease. And we were talking about this at dinner tonight. They also told me they understand. Isn't that all we ever want? For somebody to say, Sammy, I understand. I understand how you feel, that hole in your soul. I understand how no matter what you have, you become restless, irritable, and discontent. When I saw those words in the big book, I thought that they are the three words I've always wanted to describe how I felt most of my life. Restless, irritable, and discontent. I couldn't put a label on it. Today I can. So when I got sober, my sponsor told me about how... in the book, it says that I can be happy, joyous, and free. So she said, where is that restless, irritable, and discontent? So I find it for her. And then she finds, you know, happy, joyous, and free, well, page 133, I think, and she said, all you have to do is just do this much of the book, and you can go from restless, irritable, and discontent to happy, joyous, and free. Do what it says. And I did, and it's true. It's absolutely true. Did I want the easier, softer way? Yeah. Do half measures avail me nothing? Yeah. So anyway, I'm in this rehab. I am stone in love with Alcoholics Anonymous because it's the first time in my life I ever felt hope. I didn't come to you. You came to me. You took an institutional commitment to a mental institution and found somebody who was just like you and misdiagnosed by herself. You know, I'm the one who misdiagnosed me. They knew what they were talking about. And you offered me hope, and you offered me a solution, and you said that if I would do these simple things, get a sponsor, get a home group, have somebody take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, trust God, clean house, serve others, you'll have a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I wanted it. And I thought, how in the world do people ever get to sit on that side of the table? How does that happen? Well, you don't drink, you do the steps, and you don't die. And then eventually you get to sit on that side of the table and carry a message to people who were just like me and just like you. So I did everything they said to do. I had a sponsor before I left treatment. Never met the lady. And she gave me everything she had. And I remember, I've had a lot of sponsors, by the way, because, you know, it doesn't take much, just get a little resentment. Go get a new sponsor. And I kept looking for one, so I was hoping somebody would finally say what I wanted to hear, but none of them did that. So I thought, well, there's no sense changing sponsors, because I'm just going to get more of the same crap. And, you know, they shared their wisdom with me, and it's been wonderful. But I want to talk about what happened to me in the years that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 14 years sober, for several months, probably longer, I kept saying, is this all there is? Is this as good as it gets? I didn't really want it. I had no desire to drink. I just wanted to die. You know, I just wanted to sit on the edge of a bed and blow my brains out. I just didn't have the guts. And I was sitting in my home group one night, and, you know, all along this time, I've sponsored lots of women. You know, I do big book studies. I do all this stuff. I know today that self-knowledge avails me nothing. I know that my controlling you and you doing the steps the way I want you to do them is not good for you or me. I could kill you doing that one. I've learned that from experience. So anyway, I'm 14 years sober, and I'm at my home group, and I have a chairperson who's whining. 20 years sober, she's whining about this little boy who's two that she prayed for years that God would see fit to bring her a child. So she whined all those years about not having a child. Then she whined because God gave her the child. So we know we can't satisfy human ego no matter what. We can't. But luckily for me, a woman shared, when she finally opened the meeting, little judgment there. I'm not well. I'm not cured by any means. This woman shared, and she said to the group, I'm grateful that I have a sponsor who taught me that once I've done steps 1, 2, and 3, and I've turned my will and my life over to the care of a loving God, my life, my children, my job, my spouse, my friends, whomever, is no longer any of my business. I have to scoop all that stuff up here, and I have to put it over here. They're all God's kids. They're all God's kids. My job is to look around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I have a primary purpose. My job is to look around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and look into the eyes and see who I believe is hurting the most. New, old, it doesn't matter. I was 14 years sober and hurting the most. And look in the eyes of that person, and then after the meeting, go up to them and say, hi, my name's Sammy, how can I help? That impressed me to pieces. And I certainly wanted what she had. So I was told, and I knew, that if somebody had what I wanted, go up and ask them how they got it. I did that when I drank, too, but it wasn't enough spiritual about it. But anyway, so I'm still doing some of the same things. I'm just asking for different things, different stuff. And so I went up to her and I said, where do you go to meetings? I knew she didn't get sober where I got sober. You know, I got sober in a place where, you know, don't think, don't drink, go to a meeting. Don't think, don't drink, and go to a meeting. I bet if you're just a problem drinker, that'll work for you. You stop drinking and your problems go away. See, drinking was never my problem. It was always my solution. And when you told me don't drink, now you took my solution. And if you don't give me a new one quick, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink. So I went to the meetings where she was going. And then she told me about, this was a Monday night that I went to the first one, and I heard this young guy talk about the 4 and 4 in step 10. Now I'm 14 years sober, and I'm not going to yet let this young whippersnapper talk about a 4 and 4 in the step 10, and I don't know what a 4 and 4 is, because you know I have too much pride to ask. I'm 14 years sober, don't you see? And but you better believe I went home and read that thing that night. And now I know what it is, and I use it all the time. So anyway, Wednesday night, she said, come on over Wednesday night. We have another meeting at South College Avenue in Newark, 8:30, speakers meeting. I go running. I've never left. Well, that's not true, I did leave. I go to that meeting, and I just start hearing so much hope. And they're young people, and they're people who have been through the steps. They're not sober very long. They're doing it just like the big book says to do it. They use action words like immediately, now, girl, you know. They don't do this step a year program, and, you know, they don't wait, don't you dare do a 4-step till you're sober 4 years, 5 years. That kills a lot of people, in my opinion. This is just my opinion. So one night I say to this gentleman, I'm really impressed with what you have here, and I'd love to be a part of it. Do you have any women who are taking other women through the steps the way you're taking the men? He said, yes. Yeah. God bless you. He said, she's ready. Chris, meet Sammy. Sammy, meet Chris. She never batted an eye. She wanted to be of service to me. She doesn't even have the amount of years I have, and she wanted to be of service to me. So she talked to me about a couple things. She told me the history of AA. Well, I knew a lot of the history, so we had a really cool conversation about that. But what she emphasized the most was the power in one alcoholic working with another, one-on-one. And then she said to me, you know, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? I said, absolutely. She said, are you willing to go through the steps with me again? I said, absolutely. So, you know, I did that with her. And she made them very, very simple. We didn't spend a lot of time on them. Boom, boom, boom. She said to me, Sammy, let's talk about step 1 and 2. And I'm not going to bore you with how I went through the steps. If you want to talk to me after, I'll be glad to tell you. But, you know, a couple things she made very simple for me. She said to me, when you drink, do you know when you're going to stop? Mm-mm. If you're stopped, do you know when you're going to start? No. Do you think maybe you're powerless over alcohol? Hmm. Yeah. She said, is your life unmanageable? You know, in the big book where we have that page where we talk about untreated alcoholism, you know, I was a prey to depression. Huh? I was having difficulty with relationships. I have a couple theories about relationships, by the way. One, well, not because of that. Nah, forget that. The 13th step. Here's my definition of the 13th step, but it's not original. The 13th step is, step 1, my life is unmanageable. And step 12, I want to share it with you. And, you know, if you want to try that, I'd like to come back sometime and let me know how that's working for you. And then my other theory about relationships and early sobriety is it's like putting Miracle-Gro on your defect of character. If you didn't know you had any, you will find out real fast. How do I know that? sober. I had a little one. Well, let's just say I had one more Tanqueray gin in a man's suit. And, you know, it wasn't too good for me. So anyway, I'm bouncing all around now. But, you know, I definitely fit that category, 14 years sober, about how I was a prey to depression, you know, unable to... I've lost more jobs sober than I did drinking. I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. So anyway, Chris and I go through the steps, and one of the most healing things for me happened with step three. For 14 years, every morning, I recited step three out of Big Book. I mean, I had it all memorized. And, I memorized the Pledge of the Flag, too. And Our Father, I memorized all that. And after a while, it just becomes rote, you know. I just have it memorized, big deal. I have the alphabet memorized and all that stuff. Someone said to me, "Sammy, I would like you to go in your bedroom and get on your knees, open your Big Book to the third step prayer, and then I would like to hear you, or I'd like to have you say the third step prayer from your heart the way you think God wants to hear it." And I remember saying, "God, I've made a mess of things. You've given me this beautiful gift. I don't appreciate it. I abuse it. I don't know what's wrong with me. I knew in my heart, I gave God my drinking. That's all I gave him. Just my drinking. I didn't turn my will and my life over to God's care. I knew for a fact, though, that he would prevent me from taking that first drink. I still believe that. I don't fear that. You know, it says it's been removed from me, and it has. But it wasn't until I did an honest third step prayer from my heart and bawled like a baby. It was the most cleansing thing I've felt in a long, long time. Now it's time to go to step four." So, luckily, I had done several four steps, but, you know, the focus was so different this time, you know. The focus, really, after I wrote everything, was, you know, on the other two columns. Not to just, you know, the book has three little columns, yeah, we know that, but keep reading. We got to forget what they did. What was my part? What could I have done better? And what my part in almost everything was all my life was Sammy relying on human power. All the men in my life, my kids couldn't fill the hole, my bosses couldn't fill the hole, my friends couldn't fill the hole, all human power. And what else was it that's even more important sometimes? Sammy thinking about Sammy without God. The third step taught me this time. I never saw it before. You know, I was taught that you do 12-step work after you've done the 12 steps. Third step prayer tells me different. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. The victory over there may bear witness to those I could serve. Step three. Start working after you've done step three. Then you start to feel the joy. And, you know, make that decision. You know, the decision for me is just to go through the rest of the steps. And I promise you, if you do that, if you struggle with God, God will reveal himself to you. It's been my experience. That's all I have, my own experience. I've made amends to every one of those guys. That took a long time. I wish all my exes lived in Texas. They all live in Wilmington. All of them. Okay. The four and four. Here's something. See, they called me a 30-day wonder. Well, because I had so much rehab knowledge. I mean, I still have my notebooks from rehab. And who taught them. And I'll tell you how smart I was. I told them that I did not appreciate that Dr. Bob got to keep his anonymity and so did Bill. How come John had to give his last name? And they said, "John? Mr. Barnicorn." I did not know that that was a word for alcohol. Did not know. I did not know that the word cop meant to go get some drugs. I called my husband at the time, and I said, boy, you know, this guy's in so much trouble. We had to put down how often throughout the day we think about, you know, drinking or, and all this. And Jonathan wrote on the board, 8 o'clock cop, 9 o'clock cop. I said, he is in so much trouble with the law. I would make a lousy dope fiend. I really would. I really would. So anyway, now I'm in step 10. All right, it says that this is what I'm going to tell you. I had to write this because I couldn't remember how she said it to me. But, you know, in the 10th step on page 84, where it talks about the 4 and 4, about the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment, and the fear. When they crop up, there's 4 things we do about it. So, you know, my first sponsor and I are going over this. And so, you know, I'm reading this 10th step. Now she has me on the 11th step, and the 11th step says the same thing. And I said, well, that was just on page 84. And she said, I know. Bill thought a 30-day wonder like you would come along and think you could go through the book so fast that you'd miss it on 84, so he put it in again on 86. And if you don't ever resent your sponsor, chances are you had the wrong sponsor. And none of us want to hear the truth. And today I really live in 10, 11, and 12. And I am so grateful to you and to you and to you and for all those who have helped me along the way, even when I wasn't doing so good, probably especially when I wasn't doing so good. But I have to tell you about the greatest gift I've gotten sober. It has to do with a wedding. Two things happened that's so different for me. Number one, my husband and I were truly friends in AA for years before we started to date. Now there's a concept for you. Be a friend first. I didn't know how to be a friend, especially to the opposite sex. That wasn't your role in my life, not to be my friend. Girls could do that, but you know, you couldn't. So he was my friend. And we talked a lot, and I admired his sobriety. And when we first started dating, he had more sobriety at the time than I did, and sponsors were worried for me. They were afraid I was going to go out and drink. And they gave us, like my first date with Wayne, I had to have a chaperone. And we were only going to a picnic at my sponsor's house. I wasn't allowed in the car with him by myself. And she said, that's not to protect you, it's to protect him. There's another resentment. And don't want to hear the truth. When, fourth marriage broke up, I did one smart thing. I didn't get a divorce. I just stayed separated because I didn't trust me. And I just stayed separated. I figured I would be safe. And I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm like this in about 15, 16 months, I don't know. And I call my sponsor one day and I say, Bethy, I'm ready. She said, oh, you are? What are you ready for? I said, I'm ready to date now. And she said, oh, really? Well, you get yourself all gussied up. I'll pull up in the car, I'll pick you up, and I'll take you straight to detox so you can get a fresh one. Because that's what you pick every time. So now I have another resentment. And it was so true. So anyway, Wayne and I finally start dating. He actually got a divorce before I did. And we listened. We stayed very close to sponsors, and we stayed very close to helping others. And he's my best friend. Do we agree on everything? Absolutely not. I think it would be boring if we did. And we're probably opposites attract. I'm the outgoing one. He's the homebody. But he's a gift from God. And the reason I know is because I was never looking for him. And God just gave him to me when he knew I was ready and mature enough to handle it. And I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. The minister who married us, I had to make amends to. I forgot he married me before. And I guess I really liked him. And unbeknownst to us, he took the promises after the 9th step, and he read them to us as part of our ceremony, knowing our history. And he said, if the two of you are painstaking about this phase of your development, you're going to know a new happiness and a new freedom. And you'll not regret the past, because you knew we were both married before. And you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And all that's come true for us. And we use the traditions. I don't like the one that I have to be self-supporting, but I do it. I went to this church. I'm going to wrap up with this. I went to this church because I like to start AA meetings, you know. I'm a big shot, and I like to do this kind of stuff. I like to be out there, you know. So I asked this church if they would like to entertain the idea of us having an AA meeting there. I knew it wasn't going to happen because when I got to the church, the big billboard out front says, "Be still and know that I am God." And that particular Bible phrase has a very meaningful purpose in my life. So I knew that day something good was going to come of this. So I wasn't fearful when I went in there, but when I went in there, they weren't as interested in talking about, you know, starting an AA meeting as they were looking for a secretary. And I hadn't worked in 2 years because I'm living off love. And I said, "God, are you sure?" You know, at the end of my drinking, it was back when, you know, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, I had like go-go boots and hot pants. Yeah. I wanted to be a go-go girl in a cage. And now you want me to be the church lady? I said, "It's your gig. If that's where you want me, I'm going." And I've never had a job I've loved more. I love the people in our church. It's brought me back to my religion. And I am allowed to start that AA meeting if I want to. I don't want to start an AA meeting where I work. So maybe God will see fit to give me someplace else sometime if the time is right. But I don't care about being that big shot anymore. I just want to be one of his kids and help you. So I appreciate so much for the invite. And I invite you all down to South College in the near future. And thanks for letting me share.